First of all, I'm extremely impressed. I was sitting with Ezra and Chemia. I'm extremely impressed by the turnout tonight. I don't think the Roach expected it. I certainly didn't expect it. I'm talking about in the base meters first lot. It was extremely impressive. It says really a lot about the guys in Shiva, Shana Alf especially. Shana Bet's also amazing. But it really says a lot. It's very impressive to see that. So I want to speak about something that maybe touches on that, to be honest. So there's a medrash, well-known medrash, at the beginning, at the end of the parasha. It's almost identical, beginning and the end. The medrash says, it quotes a pasuk in Tehillim, Yodea Hashem Yemei Tamimim. Hashem knows the days of his Tamimim, of his wholesome ones. V'nachalosam li'olam tiyah. And their nachla, what they're gonna inherit, is going to be eternal. So the medrash in the beginning of the parasha is talking about when Sarah dies. It says this pasuk is a reference to Sarah. Sarah was the Tamimim. Sarah had a full life. And at the end of the parasha, again, almost identical, it says, Zeh Avram. This pasuk is talking about Avram Avinu. He had a very full life. And the Medrash ends off, it says a few things over there. But it ends off, Shechaviv Chayim Shal Tzadikim L'Bnei HaMakom, that it's so precious, the lives of Tzadikim, to Hashem, ba'olam hazel, ba'olam haba, in this world and in the next world. And I guess this is appropriate to share this information, that the lives of Avram and Sarah were so precious to Hashem in this world and next world, because it's a parsha of a eulogy. It's a lisbot Sarah, the lefkosa. It's really a parsha that's it's the end of an era, in a way. It's, in the beginning Sarah dies, at the end Avram dies, it's the end of an era. Yitzchak's very different. Yaakov, we know a lot about Yaakov. There were a lot of ups and downs by Yaakov. We'll see. Yitzchak, there's a certain stability. It's part of Gevura. Very different than Avram. But Avram was the beginning. He was the Shoresh of all Shoreshim. So by him it says, you made Tamimim. Hashem knows the days of his Tamimim. So it sounds like just biographical information. When you try to glean Chizuk from these types of Midrashim, it's hard because the Midrashim are just talking about Avram and Sarah as the elite of the elite, of who they were, who they became in their lives. It's hard really to relate to that. Reading a biography only says amazing stories from birth till death. It's very unrelatable. It's not much you can take out from that. So, but that's good also, I guess. That's good to have biographical information. And then, this is Zohar. Zohar, a lot of people bring it down. When the pasuk says, "Va'avram zakin bo bayomim," Avram was old, and bo bayomim, he came in his days. What does that mean? The Zohar says that all his days were brought up into the next world. When he got to the next world, he brought each day, individually, each day was worthy and worthwhile to bring up to Olam Haba, to show Olam Haba what he accomplished on that day, the or the light that he that was manifest from his avoda on each and every day of his life. And again, same idea. It's just seems to be biographical information. Just nice, good to know about the strength of our roots, the shorish of the Shorashim, Avram Avinu, to know the godless of where we came, which is important, which is very important. And if you buy into that narrative, that this is a biographical parsha, a lot of things are just to teach you about the greatness of the Avos, I think then you understand the next pasuk in that context. And the pasuk says, Hashem berech es Avram bakol. That's the famous bakol that you say, if you pay attention, when you were little, you used to sing it, bakol mikol kol. That's the bakol. Bakol is Avram, mikol is Yitzchak, and kol is Yaakov. You'll get to those pasukim later. But this is the first bakol. Bakol, Hashem gave him everything. Avram had everything. Again, unrelatable. No relevance. Everything. I daven for something. All I want is a little bit. I want something. Avram had everything. Unrelatable. But it can't be what it appears to be. I don't know if this is part of that biographical narrative. Because then there's something interesting I noticed later on. when he was passing, Vayitan Avram as Kol Asher Lo Li Yitzchak, he gave everything to Yitzchak. So that's interesting. Everything that he got the Bakol, and all of the Bakol he gave over to Yitzchak. But the next words in the same pasuk, or it's the next pasuk, says Ulevnei HaPilagshin, and his other kids, he had a bunch of other kids, Nasan Avram Matanos, he gave him a lot of gifts. You look at Rashi. Rashi has two pshat in there. What he gave them as gifts. The first gift is interesting, fascinating, what he gave him. Needs a little research, what that was exactly. And the second gift, he gave him a lot of stuff. He really took care of these B'nai Pilashim. He wasn't cheap with them. He cared about them. He wanted them to be set up, to be successful. He gave him a lot of stuff. So, my math could be off, but if he had everything, and he gave Yitzchak everything, there's nothing, there's not much to spare at that point, but somehow he found something to spare to give a lot of stuff to his B'nai Pilagshin. So apparently, Bakol does mean everything. It's just the math doesn't add up. This is a very simple mathematical problem that I have. And then if you look at Rashi, when Rashi tells you what Bakol means, first I felt very flattered, and then I came to reality. He said, Ben. I said, oh, that's nice. That's a nice gift. But then I realized I was tired and came back to reality. So, because it doesn't really make sense what he's saying. He gave him Ben. What does Bakol mean? It means Ben. Again, very flattering, but not what it means. He gave his son a long time ago. We're talking about when he was he was close to dying. Now he didn't give him a Ben now. Who are we talking about? Talking about Yishmael? That was a very long time ago. Talking about Yitzchak? So that was a pretty long time ago. This is after the Akedah. Yitzchak's 37 years old at this point. He gave him... Who are you talking about? B'nai HaPilagshim he didn't have yet. Who are we talking about right now? He gave him a son? I didn't give him a son a long time ago. Very strange what Rashi's talking about. And if you look at the Gemara about this, the Gemara has like a big conversation. No, it's not, I don't know. They don't quote, Rashi quotes a Tanchuma. And you look at the Gemara in Bava Basra, it says Bakol is a daughter. Okay, what does that mean? Because a daughter is everything. That beautiful pshat, tell your daughter, such a beautiful pshat. And then the other Tana says, no way. If he has a daughter, that's the opposite of Bakol. Big debate in feminism, exactly what Bakol means. He had a daughter, he didn't have a daughter. But in Bava Basra, they have a long conversation about this. And then the Ramban over here, he says, what are we talking about over here? You tell me he had a daughter? This is what it means, he had a daughter? Everybody gets so excited, he had a daughter? And the Ramban says, it doesn't mean a daughter. There's a deep yisayid, and there's a very long Ramban. Really a long Ramban. You don't have so many Rambans this long. Very long Ramban. And he's describing the deep, deep mysteries of what it means. I think he mentions it's the eighth of the Yud Gimel Midos of Hashem. The way I counted the eight, I got to a Midah that I couldn't figure it out. But then he says, if you're not too bright, you won't be able to figure it out. So, guys, you know, we were in the low IQ club, so I felt fine. I was okay with that. It's very deep, you said. What does it mean, a daughter? And then Rabbeinu Bechaya gets upset. He says, it's a very deep yisayid, so why is the Ramban sharing too much information over here? Nobody should know about this deep yisayid. Well, what's going on here? You don't know what's going on here. I don't know what's going on here. So I was hoping maybe tonight we could at least attempt to understand Rashi, simple pshan Rashi. What does it mean to give him a son? What does it mean to give him a son? So it's really... This pasuk is an introduction to the storyline about Yitzchak with the Shaduchim, to find a wife, Eliezer to find a wife for Yitzchak. And I want to read to you the Rashi, and I want to read to you how the Ramban paraphrases the Rashi, and then I want to talk about this. Rashi says the following. He says, Bakol means ben, son. Umi'acher shehoyelo ben, and once he has a son, now his son needs to get married. And that's an introduction to the next psukim that's going to talk about sending Eliezer to find a wife for Yitzchak. Okay, really out of place. Doesn't really make too much sense over here. I'm not sure why it's here. But that's interesting. And listen to Ramban paraphrases. He says the following. This is not what he got. He was just generally speaking. Avram had everything. He really had everything. He was a melech. He had everything. Lo chaser davar. He wasn't lacking anything. Zulasi, except sheyire bonim levno. He didn't have grandkids. He was only lacking grandkids. Sheyinchalu ma'alasu chvodo, that will inherit his greatness. V'lachein his avel azeh. And therefore, he was his avel. He was craving this. Again, introduction to now sending to get a wife for Yitzchak to have grandkids. Lachain, because he had everything, there was nothing left to want, nothing left to crave. So he focused his attention on the only thing that was left out of his reach, grandkids, to inherit his ma'alasso and his cover. It's a very deep Indian. It's really a very deep Indian. A person, maybe I'm saying it stronger than the Ramban said it, but I'll tell you what I'm taking out, what I'm understanding from the Ramban, that a person becomes, can become, sometimes can become defined by what he wants. Until that point, Avram was accumulating many, many amazing things in Ruchnius and Gashmius. And then when he got to a point where it was lo chaser davar, nothing more lacking to him, it was after the Akedah. After the Akedah, the Medrash says Hashem took away the Yetzirah from him. He reached the absolute peak of Ruchnius. There was no peak greater than that. It was irrelevant. It was pointless for him to continue to have a battle with the Yetzirah. He defeated everything in every realm. In Ruchnius, in Gashmius, he was a melech. He had all the riches. He had all the spoils. He had everything anybody could ever imagine. He lacked nothing. And now Hashem gave him bakol. He gave him a new taiva for one thing that he was lacking. It's interesting. This is such a defining moment to the point that, okay, maybe I'm making it a bigger issue than it is, but I'm okay with that for now. To a point that we're almost defining his life at the moment by the one thing that he craves. And it makes me wonder, and maybe even believe, that maybe that is how we should be defining our lives and ourselves, by the things that we crave. In the beginning of the year, or maybe I think it's more relevant in high school. In high school, people say many unintelligent phrases, many unintelligent ideas, and one of them is I want to want. Extremely unintelligent idea. I don't know if this idea was created by students, by teachers. I don't know who created this idea to want, this phrase to want to want. It's an extremely to my knowledge, the way I understand the phrase, it's an extremely immature way to define what it is that you're pursuing, or where it is that you're in the process of that pursuit, to want, because I think the conversation should really start with, tell me what you do want. When you say you want, in English, in my English, that means you don't want. You don't want. I want to want Ruchnius. My English means you don't want Ruchnius. So stop saying this nonsense phrase. Be honest with yourself. If you're telling me this phrase, I would appreciate if you're honest with me also. If you want to want, it means you don't want. It's like a double positive makes a negative. One of those English kind of things. We're learning math, we're learning English. It's a great night tonight. See, when you leave yeshiva a couple days, the whole institution changes. So what do you want, is my question. Ruchnius you don't want, at least not yet. So what do you want? And then if you decide on what you want, and if you decide that you're not happy about wanting or craving whatever that is, and you want to change that, so then you either got to achieve it, you got to gain it, or somehow you have to eliminate it. You can't want. I wouldn't say, obviously, you could want, crave multiple things, but, you know, we're limited. If it's Iridus Adoros, or it's just human, or it's just being vulnerable, we're limited. And to pursue multiple things at the same time, you'll probably be compromising one of those pursuits if you're regular, which I think most of us are regular. Regular means brilliant and amazing. That's Rosh HaTevis for regular. So if you're a regular guy, if you want to change your wants, if you want to alter them, so either got to achieve it, the previous one, or you got to eliminate it. So I want to teach you a Sfas Emes that I chanced upon, and I think he really opens up this idea. There's a Mishnah, I don't know why, I mean, I know Pshatim, but I still don't know why we quote this person. But the Mishnah in Avos quotes a person, Elisha ben Avuya Omer. Elisha ben Avuya was a tragic story. Kedai to find out more. He would say the following thing, Halomed Yelet, if you learn when you're a kid, Lamahu Dome, what are you similar to? L'diok suva al niyar chodosh, to ink written on a fresh piece of paper. Alomid Zakin, if you're learning when you're old, Lamahu Dome, L'diok suva al niyar mochel. If you learn when you're old, you're like writing on paper that was erased many times. There's a lot of marks over there. It's hard to read. It's a lot of smudge. A lot of smudge. That's what it is. It's a lot of smudge. And you understand this. We understand this Mishnah very literally. When you're young, it's not so much you're preoccupied with or that you have been scarred. And everything's fresh. And you learn something and it goes in smooth. It just goes in smooth. And when you learn something when you're old, it's smudged because it goes in through interpretations based on your trauma and based on your ideals and beliefs and mistakes and confusions. And there's a lot of smudge when you learn when you're old. When you're young, there's very little smudge. It's much smoother. And the Sfas Emes doesn't learn like that. Sfas Emes learns that Zakin and Yelid doesn't, it's not referring to age, it's not referring to stage of life. Zakin and Yelid means it's talking about energy. If you learn and you're tired, if you're spiritually tired when you learn, it's very sloppy. It's extremely sloppy. But if you learn as a yelid, if you learn it when you're enthusiastic, it's gorgeous. When a person wants, Ruchnius, when he craves Avodas Hashem, the results, they look incredible. When a person's not craving, yearning for Avodas Hashem, it looks very sloppy, extremely sloppy. You know, there's the guys who are in my shiur, I apologize. I had a thought tonight, but I knew maybe I'll have a couple guys in my shiur. So I had a thought tonight just to review what I said this week to my shiur. But I didn't have the heart to do it because I didn't want them to have to sit through it twice. It was painful enough the first time. For me, it was also painful enough the first time. But I'm just going to touch on a few points that we made when we spoke about it together, and I think there was a lot of value, but I'm not going to do it again. There is a pandemic. There is a major pandemic in the world. I don't know when it started, but to my knowledge, it's not new. But it's a pandemic nonetheless, and we could talk about it. It's a pandemic that there's old Jews in the world, old really old Jews, age. By age, old Jews. And these old Jews, if you go into the Young Israels or Agudas or wherever it is that they go, Jewish centers, whatever it is, they're 15 minutes early to the 6:30 minyan. You see old Jews like this. They come 15 minutes early to the 6:30 minyan. And you see young Jews, young, vibrant, energetic, strong, young, strapping lads. And they're 20 minutes late to the 9 o'clock minyan. That's a fascinating thing to observe. That's a pandemic. It's a huge pandemic in the world. It's true in shuls. It's true in yeshivas. It's true in many places. And the more places I mention, the more I get uncomfortable. But that's a reality. Now, I understand that many Jews who get there on time, it's not to their credit, necessarily. Because again, I'm not rehashing the long conversation I had this week. Some people are just obedient, and some people are just very time-oriented. And I understand that a lot of people don't get there on time, or also they're not time-oriented, and their things come up. And I'm not criticizing individuals. I'm not criticizing circumstances. I'm talking about, I'm making an observation that's a very apparent and obvious observation that's worth talking about, because there are certain indicators in life that you can't ignore. There are certain indicators in life that sometimes will tell you where you are in your cravings. They'll just teach you about what you crave. Because when you come to yeshivas and when you're young and you're with a lot of guys in the same stage of life and you're all competitive with each other, you ask yourself, if you crave competitive success, which most people do, and I think that's a great thing to crave, you'll probably learn very well. And if you crave honor, you'll probably learn very well. And if you crave achievements, you'll probably learn very well. But if you crave ruchnius, I don't know if learning is an indicator. Because learning indicates many things. And learning is the most important thing. There's nothing like learning. Learning is Kodesh Kadoshim. And if you're going to misunderstand that there was any sense of zilzal, the opposite of what I'm doing, the opposite. But if you ask yourself, do you crave ruchnius? Sometimes we can deceive ourselves through learning. If learning is going to be the indicator, it might be a deceptional indicator. But I think davening is quite the accurate indicator. It's an extremely accurate indicator. Because when you're davening, it's hard to stand in silence in front of your Creator and have what to say genuinely. If you're not a person who's deeply engaged in ruchnius, in his ruchnius life, or deeply attentive to his ruchnius life. It's hard to stand in front of your Creator and say psukim that are meaningless to you, that have no point, no purpose, and usually no translation, when you're not deeply entrenched in your ruchnius pursuits. It's hard to connect to a conversation with a being that doesn't exist, that his interests are not in the physical realms, when sometimes all you think about is the physical realms. And you know, it's funny that I'm talking about this tonight, because this was a hard venue for me for a while. It became a hard venue for me, because I'm not going to talk about old things, but we had a pandemic with cats. There was a major issue with cats. And when I say cats, I'm not talking about the animal. I'm talking about the human. I'm talking about the human manifestation of cats. And it was painful to see. It was actually a year ago today. A year ago, maybe next week, actually. And somebody came. He's coming next week. Or no, this week. No, it's a year ago today. Somebody's coming for Shabbos, this Shabbos. In fact, we have a special guest. Shabbos. Somebody came this Shabbos, the same very holy Kaddosh Rav who came last year, and we had an episode cats. I don't want to talk about this. And so this is a hard venue for me, because what I see sometimes in yeshiva, potentially the most spiritual and holy opportunities and platforms, we belittle and we demean into the most gashmiest, meaningless things. That, you know, you live in a world today, to get guys to come to Shacharis, you have to give lollipops, you have to give them iced coffee machines and ice cream cones and cotton candy machines. You have to turn it into a carnival to get to a guy to talk to his Creator. It amazes me. It amazes me about what people are yearning for, what people want. Because there are some select few that crave something deeper, and their lives are caught up, and their vision is focused, laser focused. It's a tzamo l'cho nafshi, that I'm yearning, I'm thirsty, I really crave l'cho. L'cho is what I crave. My nefesh is craving l'cho. There's a select few that ask, Masai avo ve'ero et pnei Elokim. I want to see his face. I want to get to know him. I want to be around him. I want to be with his presence. The davening becomes an experience. I talk about this a lot, for sure, in the morning shiur. An experience, you get lost in davening. You get lost. I say it publicly, I don't think it happens here, but sometimes it happens. It pains me if I'm like the, sometimes you look, there's like the old guy in the room, sometimes the oldest guy in the room, and and somebody has, oh, it's respectful to wait for him to finish Shmona Esrei. Never wait for me. Never wait for me. You're killing my Shmona Esrei. You're killing me. I love Davin. I don't want to leave. You're forcing me to leave. I got to take my 3 steps back. So I understand there's a way to do things, but I got to live. I got to enjoy life a little bit. I gotta get some excitement out of my day. And to stand in davening lost, you forget where you are because you're talking. And there was an episode we discussed, my Shia this week, that you take 3 steps back and then you say to your Creator, you know, I ask for a lot of things, and even if you're not going to give it to me yet, He'll give it to you, maybe not yet. Maybe you need a little more time till you give it to me. But that was so nice. Just to stand with you, just to talk to you, just to know you're listening and communicate with you, just to stand here. That was so nice. That was something that was so satisfying. Something that I enjoyed so much. When you're living a life of tzama l'cha nafshi, that you ask, Masai Ava, when am I going to get to a place and I'm going to see Pnei Elokim? Because the Targum... There's a Targum in a Pasuk in Shmuel. It's a Pasuk in Tehillim. The Sfas Emes brings it this week. He says an amazing thing. You know what Bakol means? I thought it meant everything too. You know what Bakol means? It means, a Targum translates Pasuk in Shmuel Beis, Pasuk in Tehillim, V'chamidas nafsha, your heart desires. The bracha of Bakol, the greatest bracha, is true desire. Hashem altered the desire of Avram Avinu to his next step, to his next pursuit. The greatest blessing you could have is the next step that you need in your life, that you'll be blessed with the desire for that step. But if you think this happens accidentally or automatically, it's a terrible, grave mistake. If you're not happy with the things you desire, but you realize you come to a clarity that you want to desire other things, it doesn't happen by itself, doesn't happen by accident. There's different ways that different people react, and there's different ways to develop different people. And you have some Jews who are very highly responsive to Musar, and some Jews who are highly responsive to meditation or tefillah, and you have some Jews who are highly responsive. I spoke to a Jew this week, my shir, to cemeteries. Some Jews are cemetery Jews. But 250 years ago, Rabbi Shaul Salanter said, listen what he said, you got to hear this and spread this gospel. I'm going to say what Rabbi Shaul Salanter didn't say, but this is what he said. 250 years ago, Rabbi Shaul Salanter said, if a guy's in yeshiva and he learns morning Seder start to finish with an extra half hour added on top, he learns afternoon Seder start to finish, extra half hour added on top, he learns night Seder start to finish, extra hour or two or three added on top. And it was, he learned Halacha Seder, and he learned Gemara Ian, and he learned Gemara Bekiyas, and he chazered, and he had the best day of his life. And 250 years ago, Rabbi Shaul Salanter said, he failed that day. That day will not be Baba Yomim, will not be able to be risen, to be raised, to be taken up high at the end of his days. That day was a failure of a day. 250 years ago, Rabbi Shaul Salanter said that. And we walk around sometimes believing that if my learning today was Bakol Mikol Kol, I had the best day of my life. And 250 years ago, Rabbi Shaul Salanter would shout from the rooftops, and he met a lot of dissent, but he won the war. And he would say, if you're not inspired and building on your inspiration and changing your desires and developing your cravings for tzama l'cha nafshi and trying to believe and want more to connect to Hashem, your day wasn't a day. And this is shocking. This is the most shocking thing I ever heard. You tell me I learned all day, perfect day of learning. I know everything I learned. Everything's in the pocket. A failure of a day. You can't hear this clearly enough. a failure of a day. Because that doesn't define you. Your cravings define you. And your indicators tell us where you are. And you learn so well that when the Chazan started Asherah, you needed to learn for another minute. And you learned so well. And you got there before Shacharis. And it was time to put on tefillin. You couldn't let go of your learning. That's how well you learn. You're learning so well that I'm not even sure what you want. You want to be the top guy in yeshiva? You're getting there. You want everybody to be very impressed by you? You're getting there. You want your band to be proud of you? You're getting there. You want to feel great about yourself? You're getting there. You want to have a lot of achievements? You're getting there. You want to work for the boss? You're not even close. You're not even close. You want to work for the boss? You're not even close. You're in the wrong direction. You're walking down the wrong path. Jews are daveners. Jews alter their cravings. Jews develop their cravings. If we started with math, maybe we'll end with math. 250 years ago, Rabbi Shaul Salanter said, this is what I heard. I don't know this. I didn't see this. This is what I heard. He said that if a Jew doesn't find a half hour of his day to really build up his cravings, his chemda, the chemda of his nefesh, his tzamalucha nafshi, of being inspired and want to become closer to Hashem, want to develop in his ruchnius. If a guy's not giving a half hour of his day, failure. He had a failed day. It's not going anywhere. That was 250 years ago, so we'll do a little math. Chaim. 250 years ago was a half hour. So if you count for inflation, and if you count for your Yiridus HaDoros, that means, I worked out the calculations, I told my shiur one thing, my math wasn't 100%. It comes out to something around today, you need 38 hours of your day to be focused on being inspired to get close to the Rabbona Shalom. 38 hours a day. I think that's accurate. I think that's extremely accurate. And now, you know, the inflation the last couple of years, terrible. Who knows really what that 38 hours is? We've got to check the job reports. And yeshiva is a place where we crave the Rabbona Shalom. Yeshiva is a place that we crave Kirbis Elokim, but we crave davening. We crave davening. We love davening. Davening is the place I could discuss how my morning went. I could ask about how my afternoon's going to go. I could talk about everything and anything under the sun. But I could just sit and stand and spend time with my Creator. What's better? What more could you crave? What else are you excited about? But there's no accolades in that. Nobody's going to notice that. You know, and sometimes, forgive me for saying it, but sometimes if you are noticed when you're davening, I don't know what you're doing. I'm not sure what you're doing. Davening is a very private affair. Nobody needs to dance around when they're davening or to scream when they're davening. Davening is a private affair. It's between you and the boss. Not between you and everybody. It's between you and the boss. But if your heart's in the right place, or if you want to get your heart in the right place, so I highly encourage you to take a look at your indicators. Well, there are many. There are many. Take a look at your indicators. Take a good look at your indicators. As an aside, as we're eulogizing the Avos and Imos, the way you talk to your parents, great indicator. It's a great indicator of where you are in Ruchnius. Great indicator. If you're a little nasty or sharp with your parents, great indicator. But if you're humble and accepting, you don't talk back to your parents. Like you see how Lavan spoke in front of his father this week, and Rashi says very nice thing about Lavan. He just spoke ahead of his father. Very nice thing. The way you talk to your parents, great indicator. How you daven, great indicator. Notice these indicators. And Mirz Hashem will develop the tzumah of the Nashi to say, Ad Mosai Ovo Ve'ero Pnei Elokim, which is the goal.